It's 8:14 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Sattarville Basin Planning Commission meeting last night. On the phone with us to kind of recap some of the items there, I've got Vice Chair of the Planning Commission, Bea Peck. Hi, Bea.
Good morning, Leslie.
So no decision on the mixed-use project called Village at Silver Summit. Perhaps most interesting there was how this project handles its affordable housing. The developer says it's cost prohibitive for him to build the affordable requirement housing on site. So what is the requirement? The project has nearly 210,000 square feet and some 50 units.
The combination of residential and commercial space pencils out to 30 affordable housing units, and that's where the developer felt that it was cost prohibitive. What we discussed last night, besides our concerns about moving the affordable housing somewhere else, the developer had suggested they could build it in Camas. We certainly want it within the basin, since the development is within the basin. And they talked about a fee in lieu. We're not crazy about that, only insofar as we'd really like to see the affordable housing built contemporaneously with any of the developments. I think we'd be consistent about that in the basin. So we did talk about some sort of hybrid, that if they could, you know, build some units as we did up in the Whole Food projects, that might make us happy. Find maybe a willing partner in the area. There might be someone else trying to put something in that they could use, be a little more creative. So that's where we've left it, and we've asked them to come back with some ideas on that. We also have asked for a little information from the county, from Tom Fisher, on the county's policy, and just to make sure we're all on the same page. But it's an interesting problem.
Yeah. How much are those fees in lieu of now?
Well, according to the staff's calculations, it would be about $2.5 million, which is a fairly sizable chunk of change. But we don't know when that would be applied, how it would be applied. And as I say, our philosophy going in is that if you're building it in the basin and your requirements for affordable housing should also be in the basin.
Yeah. We do have that brand new bus line, though, coming out of Camas.
Yeah, I understand that. And it's a good point, but we're still trying to create buildings and density and clustering where we hopefully will have transit centers and get people out of their cars. So it's a little bit of competing philosophy. I agree with that, but that's why we're going to keep gathering information.
All right. So the deal is that he's got to have that affordable housing component figured out before anybody signs off on him moving forward with the other plans?
I think with us, we've really been adamant and trying to be consistent that we get that portion of any development nailed down, literally and figuratively, before we go forward with anything else.
All right. Also, when do we plan to do something about the traffic impacts in this area, given that we've got the Silver Creek Village project coming online as well?
Were you there last night?
No.
I must have asked that question 15 times, and we all asked that question, and it's going to be required that, for instance, in that Silver Creek area, that the roundabout be widened, and I know the county has worked on purchasing some additional land in order to make those improvements and widening. But yes, it's a concern that we have the Silver Creek Village and then the Village at Silver Summit and, you know, other pieces coming into play. And when will the roads catch up? So that's a question that we've asked. We don't have answers. I know that transportation and transit plans are in place. But, yeah, we'd like to know that, too. It's not a criticism. It's just, we just would like to know what's the triggering event to get those things done. And a lot of that has to do with UDOT, so not necessarily the county.
The Village at Silver Summit, my understanding, they could have a coffee shop there, a bank, a restaurant, and some talk of creating commercial as well, so people wouldn't have to drive into Kimball Junction. But I think you asked, are we going to end up creating a mini Kimball Junction?
Again, I think that was the quote from last night. You're exactly right. We applaud the fact that we're trying to create density and cluster in some other hubs, as we had talked about a couple of years ago when we were reviewing the general plan as a commission. But you're right, if we do create those hubs, and you know, how do we handle that traffic? So we're looking forward to some insight and answers on timing.
Also, continued discussion on the Canyons Resort Spa. There were a few comments during public hearing. We still hear people complain about the heights of the new buildings in the resort core, but as Commissioner Chuck Klingenstein noted, they measure from finished grade, and the developer can decide what that is. So are we going to get this issue settled? Or?
Well, that has been the crux of it, because in the past and current code, the developer can determine finished grade, and we have not had control over what finished grade is. So, for instance, the information building finished grade was much higher than anyone anticipated, and when the building started to go up and it was, you know, 10 feet off the ground to start, you know, it caused some issues. So this group is trying to create a standard that would be more predictable, but it does have growing pains, and the Westgate group does have their concerns that that the measurement for elevation, using elevation, is not an appropriate method, that it will create more stories. So it's a real mixed bag of definition and perception, and we are still trying to get as much information and insight as we can get. I don't think we're sold on it yet, but we recognize the problem that determining what finished grade is out of the commission or county's control, and maybe it's best that we adopt something that is more predictable. But as we said, we had good testimony last night and some good comments and good demonstrations from the public. It'll be continuing on July 25th, and we've asked the applicant to specifically answer many of the letters and presentations we had last night so that we can get as much information to as many people as possible.
And also, with regard to the Lower Village, Commissioner Klingenstein still asking if there can be some creative planning done for the parking area there. TCFC representatives still say they're constrained by a parking lease with Vail. So what's your take on this?
Well, obviously, we haven't seen the lease, and Chuck is correct. His biggest concern is that it's a large parking lot. It's not destined to be asphalt, but it is. We have been trying to avoid sort of those seas of parking lots. But this has some competing tensions. Vail has rights to it under their lease. They're not the applicant in front of us, so TCFC may be unfairly bound by the lease in terms of negotiating with us as to, you know, breaking up a parking lot that size. So it's a conundrum. And again, we'll just try to keep noodling it and see if there's a different configuration that wouldn't violate a lease but would hopefully break up such a large allotment. But I don't know where we'll go with that, to be very honest with you.
So the Snyderville Planning Commission has had a couple very busy months. Things slowing down at all here?
I would not slowing down so much. July 25th will be a more concentrated meeting. We'll have primarily the Canyon Spa so that there's enough time to address the public's concerns, our concerns. But, yeah, it may not be quite as hectic as we've had some of those 5 and 6 hour meetings, but we'll see. Every time I've said that, it's a jinx. So now we'll probably go 8.
Okay. All right. Anything else, Bea, you wanted to make note of?
No, I appreciate the time, and I'm looking forward to speaking to you again soon.
Okay. That's the Vice Chair of the Snyderville Planning Commission, Bea Peck. KPCW News Time 826. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Council meeting in work session tomorrow starting at 4:30 in the studio with a preview of some of the items. I have City Manager Diane Foster along with Assistant City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
445, the Main Street Plaza project design. Following last week's HPCA, the Historic Park City Alliance meeting, it sounds like we may need to go back to the drawing board on this. Diane?
We don't plan on going back to the drawing board. I think we're pretty close on design. Obviously, the HPCA is a significant stakeholder in this process, and we look forward to their input on that. We do think a lot of the things that HPCA has been concerned about and want have been addressed. So, for example, having parking on the bottom floor, HPCA has generally been really supportive of the idea that we make that plaza level with the street and make it a usable space. So it could be an event space. There are other things that City Council wants to look at, such as neighborhood impacts, the idea of a road that would go next to the Brewpub Plaza. The staff recommendation is that we not use that as a permanent trolley turnaround, but that we use it during events and it be a one-way street. We'll also be talking a little bit about paving and things like that.
Well, that's what I had heard the concern was, specifically that one-way street. I think we're calling it a bypass driveway that abuts the Brewpub there. Apparently, residents think it need to be a two-way street, but you do that and you just cut out a lot of the plaza.
Correct. That's exactly the trade-off. And also, we are cognizant of the impacts to the Wasatch Brew Pub, who is our neighbor, and we want to be careful about not putting, too many trucks, et cetera, at that intersection and interrupting people who are out on the deck there.
So you feel like that's resolved then? We're just going to keep it as a one-way bypass?
It's not. This is a city. All these items are up for City Council discussion. We invite folks to come and talk to the City Council about it. And our hope as staff is that we're going to finalize all these items and then move into design. The hope is we had initially planned on starting it in the fall, but then we said, that's going to put it out of commission for a little bit too long. So we believe we could start it in spring of 2018 and finish in the summer of fall of 2018.
So are we clear on the future use of this plaza? I mean, is it going to be a quiet park-like space, or is it to bring more vibrancy to Main Street? Main Street, I guess you should say.
I think the intent is both. So I think a quiet park can bring vibrancy to Main Street, right? The idea that you go up there for something. And I think the intent is, on a regular basis, that it's not programmed, or if it's programmed, it's not programmed with that it would be non-amplified music. So you might have somebody up there playing guitar and hanging out in the park. It is intended as a plaza and event space that we can actually, then it can bleed into Main Street when we do close Main Street.
So budget is still a problem. The budget was set at $7 million. It looks like we're up to $8.3 million. How do we resolve that?
This is a challenge that everyone in this area is dealing with, no matter if it's residential, commercial. The building industry is back and the employees aren't. So if a construction company has a choice of doing a project in Salt Lake or a project up here, they're going to do it in Salt Lake. So there is a premium on coming up the hill. It is more expensive for them to do a project up here. And all the big firms tend to be in Salt Lake.
So we just pay it? Is that what you're saying?
It is one of those.
Or do we make cuts?
That's absolutely a City Council decision. So staff has areas where we could make cuts. We believe we've actually, City Council has already made cuts to this project. There were additional features included in the past, and those have been cut out. So it's pretty bare bones right now. Make it seem like it's just going to be a blank area. Bare bones is more like there aren't expensive features that would be nice to have. They're the basic of what we would expect for a Main Street plaza.
Let's talk to the incentive program to use accessory apartments and affordable homes. So staff is recommending against this type of program. They've got several factors, among them saying that it's not likely that a homeowner would agree to a deed restriction that has no end date. Anything less than half to three quarters of the cost wouldn't be sufficient incentive for the homeowner, and it could possibly reduce overall property value. So what are we talking about the accessory units as part of that Woodside Park Avenue development?
No, we are doing accessory units there because as a city, we're the owner and we can put a permanent deed restriction on those. This was a question that Tim Henney brought up. As you know, at the city, we're leaving no stone unturned when it comes to affordable housing and looking at what creative ideas can we look at. There have been programs in other ski towns where they've looked at let's say you're in Prospector and accessory units are allowed there and they're not precluded by your HOA. So everything says you could do an accessory apartment. However, it's pretty, residential construction is expensive. The idea there would be that the city would come in and pay for some or all of the cost of building that accessory unit. And then the homeowner would have the benefit of the income from that. However, it would be a limited or capped income based on affordable ranges. What staff looked at, so Tim Henney and council concurred, asked this to come back to city council. We, instead of putting this on work session, staff wanted to start with communicating the information to council. What are some of the things we think may be showstoppers here? And city council, and then asked the question, you still want to talk about it? Because it may be the case that city council says, okay, we're okay with acknowledging those possible showstoppers, but let's try it anyway.
Staff reports, though, that Vail has tried this and has had limited success with a similar program. So given what we know about Vail, do we take it any further?
Staff recommendation is to not do it and to put those funds into other areas of affordable housing. However, I do want to say that staff is absolutely always willing to look at ideas that council brings and says, how about this? How about this? That's the mode we've been in, and I think that's the reason why you see just these 8, 9, 10-hour meetings is because we have a lot of creativity going on and we've got a lot of implementation going on.
Now, there's an agenda item that says Bonanza Flat Property Framework and Timeline for Planning and Public Outreach Efforts. The staff report attached to that was, however, the federal public lands.
The public
policy.
Lands. Yeah, that was a mistake in the packet that Matt and I and Becca and Michelle all figured out at about 11 o'clock last night. And the public lands staff report got put in there twice. We will republish the packet today. And Heinrich Dieters, I read the report over the weekend, Heinrich Dieters put together a staff report because some of our partners and members of the community are saying, okay, we bought it 2 weeks ago. Where's the conservation easement? Where are all these other things? And what we wanted to be able to say to the community is we are absolutely in high gear working on this. I just saw Heinrich Dieters and Wendy Fisher come out of a meeting yesterday. So they're starting the process to do a baseline analysis. They're starting a process, and there'll be a discussion on July 13th with City Council about what do we want this to look like, recognizing that at the end of the day, the City Council representing the citizens of Park City are the ultimate authority on this land.
So apparently the city fielding a bunch of phone calls from people asking, can I still camp there? Can I bring my dog up there? What are you telling them?
Right now, this is, and you'll see this in the packet later today, is business as usual, so no changes, meaning that it's private property, and technically, in the past, you weren't supposed to be camping on that land, and currently you're not supposed to be camping on that land. It is something that people can go hike on. We're not precluding that. And so it is truly business as usual right now.
So are we enforcing it? Because it never has been enforced.
In the same spirit of business as usual, we're not having heavy enforcement up there.
When do we figure out the cost of how to owning and managing this property? Who's heading that up?
That's Heinrich Dieters. Heinrich manages all the city's property, and he's quite familiar with things like what does it cost to do weed maintenance. That's probably something that hasn't been done a lot in the past. And 1,350 acres will be a price tag for that weed maintenance. However, in that category, if you keep up with weeds, it's less expensive. I will say City Council was aware and actually wanted to use a small portion of the bond premium specifically for that, the idea that owning land does cost money.
Yeah, we also have like liability insurance.
True.
The conservation easement, I mean, just a...
all of
the stewardship.
That. Yeah, and I would say
so
that.
So do we have a, we don't have, we're going to find that price tag though. We don't know what that is yet.
We don't know what that is yet. However, we do based on our experience with 7,000 acres of open space that we manage. We do have a general idea of what that can cost. You know, it'll be probably in the range of a couple $100,000 a year. I wouldn't expect it to exceed that. Actually, that's probably a little bit high. It's probably more in the 80 to 100. What I'm thinking about, though, initially is we're going to be putting in trailheads. We're going to be doing the things that will allow people to access the land, yet will really protect the land. You want to have a restroom at the trailhead because you don't want people using the property for that.
Let's move on to the downtowner agreement, Matt. We're council scheduled to look at this $359,000 contract. The city angered a number of local taxi companies with an earlier proposal, basically offering a taxi service from, say, my house to the store and then back again. And I think what they brought up was not only will this create twice as many car trips as if I just drove to the store myself, but it could potentially put the taxi companies out of business. So why would I call a taxi when I can get a free ride? So what's changed in the last couple of weeks?
Well, in the last couple of weeks, we've done a lot of work with the taxi and for hire industry. For the benefit of the listeners, we had previously had the downtowner up for approval, which is, you know, obviously the way you called it, it does sound like a taxi system, but it's really not. It's really sort of a component of our overall transit system. And this is a growing trend across the country, and it's called micro transit. And so, you know, as our listeners know, we've been in a very, very aggressive phase of implementation. The taxpayers approved two sales taxes. We've increased our transit budget by $2.5 million year over year alone with the new sales taxes. And we've seen e-bikes. We've seen the new Electric Express. We've seen a Camas commuter shuttle. And so you're going to see all these improvements come in, and some are going to work and some aren't going to work. And so we're in this very aggressive schedule and rollout. This is a pilot program that we're attempting to try. And I think we've got some accountability probably as staff, as an organization, about the rollout of this and about informing the public and informing the for-hire industry. And we think there's been a lot of confusion out there. For example, last year, we saw this firsthand when we went to City Tour in Aspen. We brought about, you know, 60 or 70 people to the Aspen community, and we spoke to their transit folks. And this was something that they had rolled out, and they've seen great success to the tune of, you know, some in Florida. Even there's a community that has about 16,000 people riding this service in a month. And so right now our goals are to get people out of their cars, to reduce congestion, to get more people riding our transit system. And we have found in other communities that by adding different opportunities and different modes, you're able to get people out of their cars and get them onto the transit system. So we've got some work to do here, and we've had some good meetings with folks, in particular with the for-hire industry. They were interested in perhaps applying for the RFP, putting together an LLC of their own, and making an application to respond to the RFP, and unfortunately it was closed. So this week, one of the options for council is to cancel the RFP and perhaps put it back out to bid. They would probably be instructive if there were some things they wanted to see, like service areas improved or expanded. So that's what's up for discussion this week.
All right, well, let's talk about it. So it is not point to point. It is just from my house to the closest bus stop.
Well, in some regards, it's point-to-point, and in other regards, it's to a transit node or a transit service. right now, it covers more or less the entire downtown area, the Erie Hillside neighborhood area, and the majority of the Prospector area. So that is our most densely populated area, but it also has relatively low ridership. And so it's really important for us as we're scaling up and as we're trying new things to be flexible, to be nimble, and trying to meet demand. One of the greatest complaints we have about this free transit system that runs 365 days a year is convenience. And convenience runs the gamut. Convenience from when the bus shows up in my house, even having a 40-foot bus on a residential street that's tightly congested, making stops along the way, we've found in our surveys is inconvenient to people. And so learning from other communities and what's happening around the country and around the world, this micro transit is something that's growing and something we thought we'd try.
Okay, but you haven't answered the question. Somebody living in Prospector, will they get a ride to Fresh Market so they can pick up the Electric Express, or do they just get on the bus, the red route, and takes them to Fresh Market?
They would in this system. They would get a ride to Fresh Market in this system, the way it is proposed today. I think that that, again, the idea is to get more people out of their cars, more people riding the transit system.
Yeah, but now we've got four trips instead of two, right?
It's a great question. And so what we did see in Aspen, for example, was that they were having a hard time servicing these trips that are 0.3 miles or 0.6 miles, you know, within a mile, within a mile and a half. And they actually found that their for-hire industry didn't want to make these trips. They were small. They weren't cost beneficial. And so they were okay as having this kind of augment their transit system. Now, we've subsequently heard, and this is one of the reasons we take this to a public meeting, we've subsequently heard from our for-hire industry that they are interested in these trips and they do see some viability. So they've made some proposals to staff that we're, you know, intend to share with our city council. So in another community, that industry said, hey, you know, we're really not interested in these trips. They're really not beneficial for us. But we've heard the opposite. And so that's the reason that council continued the item. And so for the benefit of your listeners, you know, there's still obviously another day or two to take a look at this, to contact your council member, to show up at our council meeting and provide that input. We do anticipate to have a lot of people in the for-hire industry there. And we've had two meetings with staff and elected officials to try to work this out. And I hasten to say that, you know, maybe this is what it looks like when it's working, when people are engaged. Obviously, we wish we didn't upset people or surprise anyone, but people are engaged now. People are learning more about our system. They're learning more about this kind of aggressive implementation phase that we're in. And so we're going to discuss it on Thursday evening.
So what is the staff recommendation? To hold off a bit?
No, the staff recommendation now, meeting with the for-hire industry, is to consider the four alternatives and go with council direction. I think that initially they had come in with a very, very strong recommendation, but now I think they're lukewarm. I think they're open to perhaps opening up the RFP again and soliciting some alternatives in the effort to be more transparent, to engage the community. And if there is a viable alternative that perhaps keeps this in the hands of local businesses or a local first mentality, I think that staff would be very, very supportive of that. You know, the concern is the viability. It's making sure that it works and making sure that we're able to deliver a level of service and customer service that's commensurate with our existing transit system. But I think right now we would be open, if there's a viable alternative, to opening up the RFP again.
So the service would be available 24/7?
No, it would be more or less during the most congested business hours, so around 2 to 2 o'clock to midnight, 5 or 7 days a week.
I think we're proposing a 12-hour a day service, and you know, as Matt said, this is a different kind of service. The other piece that we haven't really talked about as staff, but you'll see us talk about a lot more because we have heard a lot, particularly from the taxi industry, about the cost. And this is actually less expensive than running buses. We can run 3 micro transit vehicles for less than a bus, for about the same cost as a bus. So if you look at, let's say, lower performing areas like a Thames Canyon route, where we don't necessarily go as deep into the neighborhood as maybe the residents would like, and the bus ridership is lower, we can have higher service, get a higher percentage of those people using transit, not bringing their cars into town, and doing that for the same cost.
Yeah, but what I haven't heard, though, is helping the folks who work on Main Street until 1, 2, 3 in the morning and need a ride back out to Richardson Flat.
Oh, as soon as Richardson Flat is open, just like we did during Sundance for our pilot period, we will have buses going out there. And you've seen the city extend the hours of transit specifically in response to Main Street workers. That will absolutely be the case.
What do you mean Richardson Flat when it opens? It's open, isn't it?
The park and ride?
Yeah, I mean, the parking lot's there.
The parking lot is there, but it's not an active park and ride. So we haven't worked on the things. There are things we're going to want to do with that parking lot and with the transit service, which you'll see in the next couple of years, right? The work going on 248 to put in the HOV lane, et cetera. So that isn't formally open as a park and ride lot as we see it.
But what's important for the listeners is that we do currently have a free guaranteed ride home program. So if someone is taking transit into the community to get to or from work or go out to dinner and something like that happens and they get stuck here, we do have an option for them to get home for the evening.
What's that phone number?
It's on our website. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but it's on the front page of our website.
Okay. All right, I need to leave it there, you guys. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
The Kimball Arts Center Board of Directors has named Lindsay Smith as its new executive director. She replaces Robin Marouche, who had stepped down earlier this year. Lindsay and the chairman of the board, Maggie Abu-Hajdar, join me now in the studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So congratulations, Lindsay. Maybe just tell us, start by telling us a little bit about yourself and why this is something you wanted to do.
Thank you so much for having me. I come from Clark Planetarium, and I have a long history of nonprofit educational work, and this opportunity just resonated with me. I love how the Kimball makes art accessible for the community.
So do you have a background in art?
I actually do. I went to college on a ceramic scholarship. I was not a science person when I joined Clark Planetarium, but science and art really do go hand in hand. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah, and maybe not even necessary, because I'm guessing what your big role will be is to keep the center afloat and then help raise money to build a permanent one, huh?
Correct.
Yeah, so how are you going to do that? Any ideas for how that happens?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to spend my first 60 to 90 days doing a lot of listening and learning. So I'm looking forward to meeting with the community, spending more time with the board and the staff, and really working together with them to further refine and develop our plan to get to that ultimate goal.
Yeah. So maybe what something that brings over from the Clark, though, is it, I mean, it's a big part of it is exhibits. Is that something you've got some background in then as well?
Yes. And actually in 2016, we remodeled our exhibits halls at Clark Planetarium. So I was a pivotal leader in the fundraising, the design and installation and grand reopening of 10,000 plus square feet of new exhibit space.
Yeah. So is Park City your home, or are you commuting from the Valley?
I am commuting from Salt Lake.
Okay, and that'll stay?
Well, for now, I have a wonderful little boy who's very happy in his school, and we will let him stay there and be comfortable for now.
Okay, so Maggie, why was Lindsay a good fit for the Kimball?
Well, I do want to say the board did a national search. We interviewed many strong candidates, but at the end of the day, we found the strongest candidate in our own backyard. You remarked on her science background coming from the Clark Planetarium. That was something in particular that was very exciting to us, very interesting to us, that that intersection of science and art. I think that interdisciplinary focus, and her passion for both, I think, in particular, really creates a possibility of having some new exciting ideas here for our Art Center. Lindsay touched on her background at the Clark Planetarium. We found her background there and what folks had to say about her performance down there to be particularly impressive. She has done everything from staff and operational development to fundraising to, as she mentioned, the supervision and envisioning of significant capital improvements, which, as you know, is something that's right up the road for us at the Kimball Arts Center.
Yeah. Where do things stand with a new center?
Well, we've talked about this before, Leslie, and we are closely vetting several options right now, but we are getting very, very close to voting on a new location. And I hope to be back in here in the very near future to talk about that exciting new plan.
So best case scenario would be how soon that you'd get a location and a build?
Well, the location decision should be made relatively soon. I would say in the next, you could expect a decision in the next several weeks maybe up to 2 months, but I would say in the next several weeks. As far as the build, that depends on the location. And it depends on our ability to raise the funds necessary. But I think that the community understands that in order to continue to deliver the arts programs, not only educational, but events and exhibitions, we did need additional space. We are in a temporary space now. And I think that the community is really excited to get behind the new Arts Center. I think the Art Center that we have envisioned in the space that we will soon to announce is really going to be exciting for the community and should really get a lot of community backing.
All right. Former director Robin Roosh, she stepped down a couple months ago. So how, it just been running on its own?
Well, I have to give a lot of kudos to our staff. Kathy Kennedy, who is our managing director, did step into the role as managing, as acting executive director, and she's done a fantastic job. But we also have just a very, very highly functioning, highly talented senior staff who have been, who have jumped into the void and done a remarkable job, especially since we are heading into our gala on July 13th, as well as the Arts Fest, which will take place in early August.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a huge deal, is the three-day Arts Festival, and something that you've probably attended then, huh, Lindsay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, and it's, I guess, being planned, huh?
It is planned. And, you know, I think we encourage everyone to come out for the gala as well as the Arts Fest. It'll be a great opportunity to meet Lindsay and also to see what the Kimball Arts Center does best.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
I'm just so thrilled to be joining the Kimball, and I feel like I'm coming into an incredibly exciting time, and I get to build on already very strong legacy, and it's an amazing place. I'm so happy to be here.
All right, you start July 10th.
10th.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, enjoy your time off.
Thank you.
She'll hit the ground running.
Yeah. Okay, Lindsay Smith, again, the new director for the Kimball Arts Center, along with Chair Maggie Abu-Haidar. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:53.
There's no place quite like Park City, and that's why we support local morning news with KPCW. All Seasons Resort Lodging provides nightly rental management and HOA services to care for your Park City property, as well as marketing and property maintenance. More information at allseasonsresortlodging.com.
Hi, this is Gabriel Melendez, personal banker at U.S. Bank in Park City and sponsor of the Miner Nation Report on KPCW. We offer financial and retirement planning, IRAs, and retirement services, along with investing and wealth management. U.S. Bank is located on the corner of Park Avenue and Deer Valley Drive. USBank.com or 647-3726.
It's 8:54. Good morning. Well, coming up on Saturday, author Barbara McNally, who will be signing copies of her new book, Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife, not just surviving but thriving. Barbara McNally joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. So what do you bring into Utah? Books, and I guess why Utah?
Well, I'm so excited because I've gotten involved with the National Ability Center in Park City. I love Park City, so that's my second home. And I am happy to share the book at Dolly's Bookstore, and National Ability Center will be there too, along with Wounded Warriors to share their stories.
So this is at Dolly's, I think, Saturday, 5 to 7 p.m.?
Correct, and I'd love everyone to come by and support Dolly's Bookstores, learn a little bit about National Ability Center, and hear some great stories about Wounded Warriors and their wives and how they not only survived but thrived. They're an inspiration to all of us.
So why did you write the book? I mean, was it that you had a personal contact with a wife of a wounded warrior?
Absolutely. I have a background in physical therapy, working with wounded warriors and their wives, and I run a support group for wounded warriors and their wives. But the impetus for writing the book was I was driving across the Coronado Bridge in San Diego, and I saw a man jump to his death. And I did a little digging and found out he was a wounded warrior, and I thought of his mother, his wife, his children, and I wanted to turn such a horrific event into something positive. So this book offers resources for the wives who are living with somebody who has invisible and visible wounds, because when someone we love is wounded, we are wounded too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to think. You know, a spouse of an injured warrior, I mean, is traumatized in ways that we really can't see. Is that what you found?
I found that their life has been changed drastically. And I've also found that there are hidden heroes. I've learned so much from them. Overcoming their challenges inspires me to overcome any of my challenges. And the third thing is it really gets me out of my petty dramas, learning about these women and what they've gone through. And I'm hoping to share that at Dolly's on Saturday.
Okay. And a portion of the proceeds will benefit the NAC's Wounded Warrior Program?
Yes, all of the author proceeds go to the National Ability Center, and they will be there too. So if you want to come out and learn more about them, if you buy a book, it goes to help their program. And they'll also answer questions if you want to volunteer and get involved somehow.
Okay. Barbara, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes. I also offer Spa Day. It's Support, Purpose, and Appreciation. It's a day to nurture our nurturers, the heroes in the shadow who care for our wounded warriors. Because where there's a wounded warrior, there's a wounded wife. And Spa Day helps these women find the resources they need and bond with other women going through similar challenges. So you'll learn more about that when you come out on Saturday.
Okay. Again, that's at Dolly's Bookstore on Main Street from 5 to 7 p.m. Barbara, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay. Have a wonderful weekend and look forward to seeing you on Saturday.